Listen.
Hello?
We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
But they are who we thought they were.
Hello and welcome to another exciting edition of the Next Fan Up podcast. I am Pod Vader here with our final division preview. I don't know if we could say we saved the best for last, but it is certainly a division that needs to be recognized nonetheless. The NFC North, the Kings of the North. I think maybe the King of the North is in this division. We'll find out when James gives his Game of Thrones comparisons in just a little bit. Let me tell you a little bit about what we do here on the Next Fan Up podcast. We are by the fan, for the fan. If you've missed any of the division previews we've presented to you during the entire month of June, please subscribe to our show. We are on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, AHA Radio. I highly recommend the AHA Radio app because not only can you get it for your iPhone or for your Windows phone, it is available in over 3 million cars across this great world globally in their dashboard. And we know you like being able to get into your car and hitting a button to hear podcasts. So please go check out the AHA Radio app. You'll find the Next Fan Up podcast on that app. We are also at blogtalkradio.com/nextfanup. All of our archives are there. And if you want to reach out to us, you could talk to us. I am sure, I guarantee, you do not agree with every single opinion that is being addressed here on this podcast. Send us your emails, nextfanup@gmail.com. That's our email address, nextfanup@gmail.com. It's pretty easy to remember. Send us an email and disagree with us. We want to hear from you. We want to have that interaction with more fans. We can also be reached on Twitter at NFU Podcast. Apparently, Next Fan Up was taken. So we are at NFU Podcast. And on Facebook, you can also go to facebook.com/NFU Podcast to get the writings that we present to you. We have lists, we have all sorts of great things. And of course, you can get our podcast there as well. The NFC North. I have some interesting thoughts on this division. I think I disagree a little bit with what the superfans think, but let's find out exactly what the superfans think. And here's Andrew, our Jets superfan, to host the roundtable.
Late June is the deadest period on the NFL calendar, but we the superfans are still here. We've been giving you so-called division previews here on the Next Fan Up podcast. But since we aren't inevitably going to give you guys more previews as the beginning of the season approaches, I really like to look at it more as of where does each team in the division stand at this point? Because nowhere else and no other podcast will you be able to hear, hopefully, four fans who not only know their teams in and out, but also their division rivals teams. And I'm Andrew, the Jets superfan, the supposed host of this show. But I'm going to see slash hope and pray that one of the next four guys who you really want to hear talk about the NFC North come over and take the reins. And might as well start with division champs, and that'd be the Packers superfan, Brian. Brian, you ready to ride this ship, to run this ship?
Hey, man, I think you're doing a great job.
Wait, did the Vikings win the division title last year? So like, I would have Davey come and do it. But since Davey's not here, and he won't be able to actually help me out a little bit over here because, yeah, I do know the NFL and I know the NFC North, but I feel like everyone wants to hear you guys talk about it. But we're going to have to wait a little bit because we have James here who's going to give us the very popular Game of Thrones character comparisons. And James, why don't you start us off with the division title winning Green Bay Packers? And that's how we're going to refer to them the rest of the show until David shows up.
All right, that sounds good. So for those that haven't caught the previous couple episodes with the Game of Thrones character reference, we picked 32 characters from inside that world and have applied them to the 32 NFL franchises. You may think that there's a slightly better correlation for one person versus another. So that's a lot like the SATs. There's many right answers. However, I also have to caution you, there are definite wrong answers. I've been picking on them a lot, but the Cleveland Browns will never be Rob Stark. So they can, you know, just kind of forget about that. I will not accept any arguments along those lines. But Speaking of Rob Stark and speaking of the current division champions until Davey shows up, we get to Green Bay Packers. I did pick Rob Stark for them. I wish I had something better than to say sometimes the obvious answer is the right answer. King of the North, he starts off very strong, very high-powered offense, has been kind of middling. You know, he kind of rode an early success, got some accolades, but those that have watched the show or caught up in the book, he's kind of been DOA lately. That has a lot to do with injuries over the past few years, but they still have a fierce and tenacious reputation. What do you guys think of that comparison?
I'm so glad you came around on that Rob Stark answer. I know I can't remember who you had before, but the analysis just wasn't there. The King of the North is clearly the Packers, regardless of whether Davey's here or not. And I couldn't like the pick more for Rob Stark for Green Bay.
I like it because he dies horribly.
That's what I was.
Spoiler thinking. Alert! Spoiler alert!
Well, I mean that was back in, I believe, season 3, and now they're on season 6 of the show. So I don't think we have to give a 3-year warning on something like that. However, now let's move on to Minnesota and the kind of division champs absentia. So for Minnesota, I went with Benjen Stark. You have to go back to season 1 for his introduction. And now he actually made an appearance in a very brief cameo in season 6. But he's been lost to history beyond the wall up north. He had a brief time of glory with some accolades, but I mean, that's been ages and ages ago. And, but with his recent reappearance, he may be coming back to relevance. What do you guys think about this comparison?
You know, maybe he just came back to see the new stadium this year.
I like that comparison. Still don't know what's going to happen with him.
Yeah, I thought it was a good comparison, too. Really deep cuts for you there, James. I had forgotten all about Benjen, but after you kind of talked to us about kind of why you came to that conclusion, I don't disagree. I think that's a good pick.
And I feel like Brian would agree because it sort of makes – isn't Benjen the little brother?
So Benjen is the uncle of Rob Stark.
Right, but he's Ned's little brother, though.
Yep, Ned's little brother.
All right, so – I'm just trying to get as many shots into on Davey here as possible, so forgive me.
Oh, no worries. So that brings us to Chicago. And for Chicago, another deep cut, it's Renly Baratheon. He thinks he should be king, but doesn't actually work that hard to become the king. Also, he's several orders removed from being the king. Back when Robert Baratheon was dead, and well, I guess he still currently is dead, there was a big power struggle over who the rightful heir to the throne was. Renly just kind of said, yeah, it's mine, but didn't, you know, really do anything to prove that out. Renly pouts excessively and has been done in by what would surely be described by the Packers black magic, or at least Chicago Tom might describe it as Packers black magic that does them in every year.
Well, I heard the words doesn't work that hard and pouting, and I could just picture Jay Cutler sitting on the bench with that exact same expression.
Yeah, it might fit out there. I'm not sure it fits the team. They're more like incompetent. So I don't know who you'd pick, but I'd say pick the most incompetent character you've got, and that'd probably be about it. And say they don't try. Well, Cutler doesn't. He's got that look on his face. But the rest of it, I can get it. I'm okay with it.
All right. That leaves us with the Detroit Lions. With Detroit, I went with Jorah Mormont. He has a long history, but causes those around him to exile him for various reasons. He was exiled from Westeros originally for various crimes. Then he kept betraying Daenerys over in the east, and so she kept kicking him out. He kept coming back, which was kind of amusing, I guess, for a while. Once he seems to be appealing to his fan base, you know, whether they start to have a little bit of success, whether it be with Calvin Johnson or Barry Sanders, he suffers a catastrophic loss. Currently, this character faces grayscale, while the franchise has lost both Barry Sanders and Calvin Johnson. So it just seems whenever they get something to go their way, something internal to them, just they can't seem to get over the hump of their, or out of their own way and continue with their success.
Well, for the franchise to be the only one with that 0-16 hung on them, it certainly fits to consider them for exile. and that taunting every year of we're almost there, we're almost, nope, another 7-9 season. I'd say that lines right up.
Well, I just realized that I didn't even introduce anybody here yet, and that was Detroit Lion Will right there, and I understand where he's coming from in terms of, yeah, the Lions character is going to be a guy who was always reaching for the throne, but no one really took him 100% serious. I mean, the Tyrells did. The Tyrells did, but that's because they'll line up with anybody to try and go and try and get the Iron Throne. If you guys want to go see the other Game of Thrones characters comparisons, you guys could also listen to our other podcasts, other division previews. James has been giving this to us every single preview that we've had. And I keep saying the word preview. I think it might be a little bit more simple if we say, where does each team stand podcasts? You could go find those at iTunes and blogtalkradio.com. James, thank you so much for taking the time.
All right. Thanks for putting up with my nonsense, guys. And good luck with your divisional, we'll not call it a preview.
See, James is on board. So back to football, which is what I'd say about 20% of the time what people want to hear at this point in the NFL season as we're talking on June 23rd. Which one of you guys actually wants to be the host? I'm kidding. We're going to do the all division teams right now. And before
had us cowering in fear there for a moment.
We're going to do the all division teams. And I didn't look at these division teams until 30 seconds ago, but if Aaron Rodgers wasn't the quarterback, if Adrian Peterson wasn't the first running back, and Jordy Nelson and Alshon Jeffrey weren't the receivers, I would just hang up right now and have you guys, one of you guys, figure out who's going to be the host. Maybe Game of Thrones style, you guys can figure that out. But it seems that you guys got those right. Brian, since Aaron Rodgers quarterbacks your team, maybe you have the best opinion on which of the three other quarterbacks are going to take second place. I was going to say maybe push Rodgers, but I don't think it's conceivable that any of those will get to his level anytime soon.
Yeah, that's a great question. I thought we were going to talk about Aaron Rodgers, but I thought that was kind of a waste of time. It's duh. He had a down year last year, but nobody in the division is even in the same galaxy as number 12. As for number two, I think you could make a case for about any of them, but the one that I tend to lean toward most is Teddy Bridgewater. And by no means am I a big Bridgewater fan. I think that says more about what I think of Stafford and Cutler than what I think about Bridgewater. Because with Bridgewater, kind of the appealing trait is kind of the devil you don't know, or maybe the savior you don't know. You got kind of a glimpse of him last year. And I mean, he's got better talent around him than I think the other two teams do. So he's got that going for him. And the defense there is going to keep games pretty low scoring too. So if you're picking players on a team, I think it's Bridgewater. If you're just picking the player and you're starting from scratch, I think, I don't know, maybe Stafford. I think Stafford.
Well, you got to consider Stafford had the best completion rating of his career last season, and they did simplify the offense. A lot of that's being changed this offseason to make it more complex. Yes, when you have Megatron to bail you out, that also makes you look a lot better. But Bridgewater so far shows flashes of what he could become, but Stafford just has been more established and shows that he can get those throws across.
Yeah, you don't see the same kind of boneheaded mistakes from Bridgewater that we've seen from Cutler and Stafford over the years. And maybe that's just because they've played more years, but to me personally, that's a checkmark against the other two and one for Bridgewater.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's arguing for Cutler at this point, correct?
No.
I'm not ever
going to argue for Cutler. Don't look to me to do that. I would argue for Teddy. But I'll give Stafford the fact that the second half of his season was pretty good under the new offensive coordinator. He looked considerably better. But I liked the way Teddy's developing. I don't think it's been a rapid development, but he came in my opinion, with a lot of characteristics that you can't teach. He moves really well in the pocket. I like his accuracy. He's not the most – he doesn't have the best physical stature. I mean, for that, you take Cutler or you take Stafford, but – I'm going with Teddy. I think he's the guy I'd want in the division after Rodgers.
Wow. I also would go with Bridgewater, but I didn't think that all three of you guys would also. I think that's a product of us seeing Stafford and seeing Cutler, looking at them and see that they have the tools. They have the arm. They're both of them are pretty mobile, so it's not like they're a classic Brady Peyton type of guy who's just getting stuck behind a bad offensive line. But Stafford doesn't have Calvin anymore, and Cutler, while he is coming off a big year for him, for his standards under Adam Gase, Gase isn't there anymore. But maybe the return of the debut of last year's first round pick Kevin White, the receiver out of West Virginia, and also Alshon Jeffrey, hopefully would be healthy this year. Maybe he might be able to sustain that performance. But it's very interesting. I'm gonna be interested to see what Bridgewater can do with a bigger workload, and who knows if they're even going to give him the workload, because the running back for our NFC North team is Adrian Peterson. And since Davey isn't here, we're going to go to the second running back and not even talk about Adrian Peterson, because I think that's another duh situation. We have Eddie Lacy as the second running back. And Brian, that's your team again. So there's a lot of stuff going on with Lacy in terms of, is he going to be in shape? Is he going to come in motivated? What percentage of you is confident that the Lacy of 2 years ago is going to show up versus the one that we saw lumbering around the field last year?
I feel quite a bit better about Lacy this year than I thought I would at this time. We have seen some progress, at least in the news, that he is kind of slimming down. McCarthy did say that he still has a lot of work to do. But again, I think when you look at who else we had to choose from, I think it's kind of Lacy by default. Are you going to pick Amir Abdullah or Jeremy Langford? I don't think so. I think it's still Lacy. And I do think he'll be better this year than he was last year. I think last year is about as low as I would expect him to be at from a player, just shape-wise and productivity-wise, player of his skill. So I do think he'll be better. But I think it's kind of like the answer I had to the Bridgewater question is, who else are you going to put there?
Well, you have to consider, too, with Eddie Lacy. I mean, this is one of those, could it turn to a pro athlete story like, well, Prince Fielder, for example. Hey, I gave up meat. I've got a compact body. Nope, that didn't turn out. Still got injured. Then he's doing UFC training. Still didn't come around. I mean, athletes do fall for whatever they think will get them to a bit of success. And if dropping the weight is in his head right now and he thinks that's going to keep him at the top, we've got to actually see him out on the field with pads on and getting hit and seeing how much durability he still has. As far as the lines with Abdullah, a lot of flash, a lot of people drafted him pretty high in fantasy, and he definitely didn't pan out. Another year of experience and that explosiveness that he did show in, well, 2 out of 16 games might put him into the conversation next season if, again, Eddie's to take a step back.
I think I would have rather had Langford or Abdullah over Lacy last year. I mean, I don't mind you projecting that pick. I certainly expect that he'll be a lot better and he'll have lost a lot of weight. And it's really too bad Matt Forte is not still in the division, because he probably would have taken that spot. But I'm still, you know, I think we've got a couple of young running backs that are still developing, and in Langford and Abdullah, and I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens there with those guys. I agree with you. I don't mind Lacy by default, but it's not a slam dunk for me. I would have taken any of the three and probably wouldn't have argued it.
Yeah, but I like Abdullah. I think Abdullah has the most upside. But my issue there is, who's the power back that's going to be with Abdullah? I mean, I know they have Theo Riddick, who's one of the best pass catching backs in the league. But I don't know if Abdullah could, at his body type, could hold can sustain that style of play. And I mean, I know his style is more make guys miss, but you're going to get hit in the NFL. Who do they have? I believe my boy Stephen Ridley, who played for my Jets last year, is the guy there. Am I correct, Will?
Yes, well, he's there. Whether or not he gets that time is another question. Zenner's also a running back, they're saying, that could get a lot of those carries. Zach Zenner, again, he was a rookie, I believe, last season. So it's a question of who they trust. I mean, they were even talking about Riddick getting more carries this year. So there's a lot of balls ready to be handed around that offense. And just a question of how playing time breaks out, how many times they have to step back and just pass to a running back instead of charging forward through a hole.
Right. And as since we're all agreeing here, we might as well keep agreeing, because the top two receivers on our list are Jordy Nelson and Alshon Jeffrey. I mean, I look at the receiving core of every other team here. We'll start with the Vikings. You guys did bring in Laquon Treadwell, but there's really not much else there. Stephon Diggs had a nice rookie year. And you know what? I realized I was going to ask Davey about the Vikings receiving core. I don't know why we're talking about the Vikings receiving core. Let's talk about the top receiver on our board. That's Jordy Nelson, who missed last year, all of last year. And it was one of those things that you noticed him more when he was not playing. And Brian, I watch a lot of Packer games. Am I right in that, with that analysis? Yes.
I don't think anybody would dispute that. The offense looked totally different without him last year, and I don't think anybody really expected it to, which is why it was such a surprise. I do feel like he's probably number one on this list. Alshon Jeffrey is our number two wide receiver. Sorry to spoil it, but maybe we can talk about both of them. I think the list is a lot better if Megatron's still on it, but Alshon was injured last year too. But the thing is, he's really the only other true number one wide receiver in the North. Between Nelson and Alshon, those are two number ones, and the rest of the guys are all number twos. So with Nelson, I'm pretty confident that he's back 100% this year. I think one of the biggest benefits he has that he brings back to the offense is just an innate ability to adjust on the fly. He's got great rapport with Rodgers. And actually, I have heard a stat where in the two seasons where Rodgers and Jordy have both played all 16 games, Rodgers has two MVPs. I think Nelson's easily the number one wide receiver in the division.
Wow.
Well, we do have to understand with the Lions right now, yes, Megatron's stepping away, yet Golden Tate still had 90 catches last year and was healthy, even though a lot of the times those short catches ended up getting him pummeled. He got back up, got back on the field, and kept going. So the durability he has and the opportunity is going to be there this season. I'm not saying he's going to be able to break 90 or even get up to 100, but he's that much more important to the offense and might actually, if again, when you compare him to Alshon Jeffrey, who's all about talent but isn't staying on the field, it kind of was more of a push there from how I saw it than how our voting turned out.
Yeah, Jeffrey's been on the field. He's just been playing hurt. I think he played 14 games last year. He just hadn't been particularly healthy, a lot of soft tissue injuries and stuff like that. But it's not really fair to say he hasn't been on the field. He's actually been a guy who's played quite a number of games over the course of his career, if you look at it.
I'll correct myself. He didn't show up for any fantasy teams last season. I'll put it that way.
Well, that's true because he was playing hurt. You know, I agree with that. This year, you know, we're all hoping around here that he'll be a lot healthier. Supposedly, you know, he's been working out and trying to get the knock on him is that he may have been slightly out of shape, and that may be why he's getting all these soft tissue injuries. So it's sort of Eddie Lacy, but way under the radar. In that supposedly he's working out, he's dedicating himself, he's more in shape in a contract year. And we'll see if that turns out to be the case. The problem with Jeffrey's production this year, we all hope around here, is that he'll be paired with Kevin White and he'll be splitting a lot of catches with him. We hope that's the case. Whether that's true or not, we don't know. White's basically a rookie.
And he won't be splitting any catches with Martellus Bennett now either. So
yeah, or Matt Forte.
That could add to a lot of double teams out there for him as well, which could cripple his numbers.
We thought that when Marshall left, and it didn't really turn out to be the case. He's like you said, he's a pretty big, talented guy. I think he does okay with double teams, and if they double team him, they'll have to leave White open on the other side, and I think we all hope that'll be a mistake. We'll wait and see. You know, Martellus Bennett wasn't very productive last year either. It wasn't like they were double teaming him. He had a rough year. We'll talk about it later, but Zach Miller outperformed him last year, and you could make an argument based upon one year that he should be the tight end instead of Rudolph, but I won't make that argument too strongly. I'll just bring it up.
Well, I think you should make that argument. And I'm thankful that for a lot of things, but I'm also thankful that we record this podcast today, because today the news came out. The news. This is the news we're talking about in June. But Kyle Rudolph announced himself the best tight end in football. So then why are we sitting here talking about that he's the top tight end in the NFC North? We'll just move on, right?
Game over.
Yeah, the state of the tight end position isn't too great right now, I got to tell you. But if it were up to me, I'd pick Zach Miller.
Yeah, I think Rudolph is the best of a bad bunch here. I think tight end is probably the weakest position we have among the divisional team.
Well, you're biased in that, because we're now moving to the offensive line, and I'm looking at it right now, and there are four Packers on this offensive line. So, Brian, with David Bakhtiari at left tackle, Josh Sitton at left guard, Corey Linsley at center, TJ Lang at right guard, four out of the five are from your team. Is that also because the rest of the offensive lines in this division are just not that good, or is that just how good that your Green Bay offensive line is?
So admittedly, I did put the bulk of the list together. These guys weighed in, but it was my list. And honestly, I would take a healthy Bulaga even over Kyle Long, who's our right tackle. But the thing with him is injuries have been such a problem that kind of when you look at it through that prism, I think Long is probably the guy I would prefer to have on the team. But yeah, the Packers offensive line is consistently overlooked by all the talking heads on the weekend. They were a little bit banged up last year, but it actually kind of led to we unveiled a couple of gems that we had kind of buried on our depth chart that I actually feel like since this is actually one of the last years, I think Bakhtiari, Sitton, and Lang are all in contract years. So this is kind of the last hurrah with the current group. And I'm actually feeling quite a bit better now than I was a year ago about that situation that we were looking at, and just that we were able to find some guys that I think could step in a pinch and fill in. And we drafted some guys this offseason. So would be curious to hear the other super fans' thoughts, because it is a little Packers heavy on the offensive line. But honestly, I think when I look at the other players at those same positions, I'd prefer to have all my guys.
Well, the two things that I see are, one, I probably agree with you, because I look at the other offensive lines around the division, and what stands out is how much capital these teams have spent on the offensive line. I mean, I just look at Will's Lions. They spent the first round pick on Laken Tomlinson last year at the guard out of Duke. They spent a second or a third round pick, I'm not 100% sure which one, forgive me, for Larry Warford out of Kentucky a couple years ago, and he's been a little disappointing. He had one great rookie year, but since then he's been a little disappointing. And then they have Taylor Decker at left tackle and Riley Reiff at right tackle, two first round picks. So I'm just looking at the Lions roster, but also the Vikings are the same thing. Guys like Matt Khalil and Andre Smith, even though who they just signed as a free agent. But I think that really the offensive line is really a microcosm of this division, in that no matter how much the other teams try and get to the top, no matter how much draft capital they spend, they just can't quite reach what Green Bay has reached this so far in the past 5 years or so.
Yeah, and you know what's funny about that is all those guys that we just talked about, Bakhtiari was a fourth round pick, Sitton was a third or a fourth, Lindsley was a fourth, and Lang, I think, is the highest of the bunch at a mid third. So we really have gone about building our offensive line in a very different way. And this kind of proves that out, that our way has seemed to work for us anyways.
So that means there's hope for the Lions when we look at, I mean, their average age is 24 years old on that line, and they are going to be putting Taylor Decker left tackle right now. So there's a ton of learning still to be done, but eventually, if again, they're growing the same way the Packers did in-house, there is potential for them to get to that point. I think what's amazing too about the Vikings is that, is Adrian Peterson doing the job all by himself with all the yardage? Because the line has to be contributing somehow. You just can't pin it on one or two guys seem to excel. The yards just happen.
The answer is that Peterson's doing it by himself, because that line stinks. And basically, if you ask me, they lost their playoff game basically because that line let them down. I look at this list and I would say it's a statement of the state of the offensive lines around the division. I would take issue with a couple of the positions. Number one, in fairness to Brian, when he put down left tackle, what he actually put down was "no idea, Bakhtari?" question mark. So that tells you how confident he was.
That's true.
I will make a pitch for a guy who I think is underrated at left tackle, and it's Charles Leno, who had a very, very solid year at the position last year. It is admittedly, as with many of the Bears, only 1 year, but he did a really nice job on the left-hand side. He is a seventh-round pick who really came through and was quite a surprise for us. If he repeats that, I would have put him in that spot. And Kyle Long really belongs at right guard over Lang, because that's where he's going to play, and he was not a very good right tackle. And as far as right tackle goes, the one strength that all those lines have is right tackle, because all those left tackles for the Vikings and the Lions are right tackles. And that includes the draft pick this year. Sorry about that, Will. But when I looked at him before the draft, I thought right tackle. So I think that we have a lot of choices for that spot on the other teams that you could put there. So I wouldn't say that the Lions should be all Packers. I would say that you could make a good case for all four of these guys, but there are guys that I would take over them. And I would have picked another right tackle. I would have put Long at right guard, and I would have picked another left tackle as well. I would have put Leno there, because he did, admittedly, it's just 1 year, but he did a very solid job. He's flying under the radar. I think people look at the name, they don't know who he is, and they just kind of like blow it off. And something tells me that he could be a solid guy there for a lot of years. We'll just have to wait and see.
Well, if Jay Cutler is going to stay upright, they better hope so, because you look at the depth charts around the league, I'd pinpoint that spot. I mean, I know you said Leno had showed promise, but either Pro Football Focus numbers, or you look at how many hurries he gave, like 32 hurries and 6 hits, there's still progress to be made there. And I think every football team needs to take shots at certain positions that hope that young guys pan out. And this is one of the bigger risks that I see around the league. But we're going to move to the defensive side of the ball, and we're going to start with the defensive line. Brian went with a 4-3 front, but we're going to go with the 4-3 front. And you look at the linebackers. When you get to the linebackers, I know I'm getting ahead of myself, you're going to see that the linebackers might not play in a 4-3, but we're just putting the most talent on the field. That's what we're doing here with these teams. And we at the defensive end spots, we had Ezekiel Ansah and Everson Griffin from the Lions and Vikings, respectively. And inside, we had Sharif Floyd from Minnesota and Mike Daniels from Green Bay. All these guys are probably, if you look at the list of one of the more underrated players in the league, these guys would be on that list. And I think you guys might also be missing another guy, and that's Linval Joseph. But I'll let you guys discuss.
Well, I put the list together, so I'll start. I thought just the pairing of those two defensive ends, Griffin and Ansah, that is about the most athletic defensive duo you could ever hope to have. I think they're both track athletes. And then you got the two defensive tackles in the middle. Floyd's a little bit more of a plugger, who can definitely still rush the passer. And Daniels, I feel like, is a little bit more of a pass rusher than he is a run defender. So I thought just the balance of those four positions, I really liked just the way that would come together. What do you guys think?
I didn't have a single problem with these guys. I thought they were all four really good choices. They're the guys I would have taken.
And interesting, too. I mean, we're not talking household names at this point, but those who are watching NFC North football games recognize all four of these guys. And I was just thrilled to see that Ziggy's season and 14 and a half sacks paid off and getting recognized here.
Yeah, we go deep here on the Next Fan Out podcast, and we give credit to the teams that deserve it and the players that deserve it. So go if you guys want to see one of the best edge defenders in the league last year, and probably for the next couple of years, you can go look up Ezekiel Ansah. But we're going to move to the linebacker position, and we have three linebackers here. One, Anthony Barr from Minnesota. In the middle, we have DeAndre Levy from Detroit, and Clay Matthews back at outside linebacker for the 2016 season. I know that these guys don't necessarily play the outside full time and the inside full time. All these guys are hybrid guys at this point. But what does the effect of the cause of moving Clay to the outside, what effect is that going to have on Green Bay's defense this year, Brian?
Well, if we're able to do it, it would mean that we found somebody else to play in the middle, and that's still yet to be seen. I know all the word coming out of Green Bay is that Clay is done playing primarily inside. His primary position is going to be back outside. It's nice. I hope that's the case. I am very comfortable if we need to move him back inside at the same time. He really did kind of develop into more of a playmaker than most people. Most of the time when you look at the stats, he doesn't show up quite as much as he did when he was exclusively rushing the passer, but he actually, I felt like he was just as impactful playing inside. Kind of, he had a way of just timing the rush last year so that he could slip between the center and the guard and just be in the quarterback's breadbasket before anybody can lay a finger on him. So he's been able to find a way to adapt to that position. At the same time, I'm hopeful that we can play him at his more natural outside linebacker position. So we do have a couple of young guys that we drafted. One last year, Jake Scott, who came in and, you know, played a lot of snaps. I don't know how really good he was. Sam Barrington is hurt right now and for most of last year. And he's a really pretty much an unknown guy, too. He was a seventh-round pick and kind of stuck due to work ethic and then got hurt early in the season last year. We did draft Blake Martinez, who has been taking most of the reps with the ones this offseason. So if we do have a chance of playing Clay outside, it would be because he developed into a player that we can rely on in the middle.
One of the surprises, the biggest surprises of the offseason for me was that they didn't do more at inside linebacker. You know, one of the first things I heard this offseason was that that Matthews was moving outside. And so I figured they'd be spending a fairly high draft pick or, you know, maybe going, you know, off the beaten path a little bit and even making a run at somebody in free agency the way the Bears did. But, I mean, I know they drafted Martinez, but basically it looked to me like they almost stood pat. And I don't know if that's going to be good enough. I'm a little surprised that they didn't do more. And I'll be interested to see maybe these young guys, maybe they're developing better than I think.
I mean, being a Michigan Wolverine myself, I thought Jake Ryan would come in and have a bit more presence as a rookie. I mean, he's right size for the position in the middle at 6'2", 240. So maybe a little more time in the scheme there, getting used to the speed of the NFL. He might be able to put a dent in that role for the Packers next year.
I would agree with that. I think the other thing that I try to keep in mind this time of year as a Packer fan is a lot of times this is what they do. You know, we perceive these gaps in the team, and I totally agree with you, Tom, that I thought we were definitely going to do something to fill that position, and lo and behold, we wait until round four again, which is the same round we drafted Ryan in last year. I think what that comes down to is just Ted Thompson has a certain value in mind when he drafts for even positions, that he's not going to spend a first or second round pick on an inside linebacker. It's just not an important position in this defense. So whether you agree with that or not, maybe another story, but that is kind of the way that I'm reading the tea leaves.
And we're going to move on to the corners right now. And right, we have Darius Slay from Detroit and Xavier Rhodes from Minnesota. I look at the rest of this, the cornerback group and the rest of the division. To me, Chicago's not one of the worst set of corners in the league, so we're not even going to talk about them. But Green Bay with Shields, Demarius Randall, and Quentin Rollins, the two of those three guys were drafted last year, and they showed really well in their rookie years. But how angry are you? Actually, I was going to say, how angry are you, Brian? But you're the guy who put this list together, so... So what's going on?
I thought about that quite a bit. And with Shields, the thing that bothers me about Shields is he turns down contact. He is not naturally inclined to stick his nose in and make a tough tackle. He'd much rather kind of wave at the player as they go by. With Randall, the part that I really liked what I saw from him last year, I think he's got a lot of position flexibility too. I think he can play in the slot. He can play outside. He played safety in college. So those are all things that I like. I like the way that he played against top talent last year. Yeah, I thought he played well interdivisionally. But when I put the list together, I'm kind of risk averse by nature. And so I want guys that I've seen do it for multiple years. And I think Slay and Rhodes fit that description.
Well, Slay's proven too. People aren't throwing to his side of the field. I mean, it just started happening. You know, 2 years ago, showed up out of nowhere, put a little pizzazz in his run. He's shown the athleticism to keep up. And but there's always young guys creeping up behind. And it, like you said, your boys in Green Bay there could have a shot of bumping him aside next year.
At the safeties, we have Harrison Smith, and we have I'm looking at this list. All I see is ha ha. And for a second, I thought Brian was laughing at me, or maybe he's laughing at the rest of the division, just how many Packers are here. But we have Harrison Smith and HaHa Clinton Dix. Smith being, to me, one of the best safeties in football. I don't think that's a crazy statement to make at all, but Davey's not here to elaborate on it. So we're just going to go right to Clinton Dix. Brian, what did you see from Clinton Dix last year that made you think that he's made that leap?
It looked to me like he had grown mentally in the game since year one. The beginning of year one, you saw a kind of a smattering of mental errors, and then he started to turn it on toward the end of that year. Had a couple of interceptions in the NFC Championship game. And then this year, he just kind of continued along that path. And I think he was close to the top on the team in tackles. And again, this is another one of those positions where I don't feel like the talent you have to choose from at either of the other three teams really supersedes what HaHa can bring.
I mean, for the Lions, I mean, Glover Quinn out there did have an effect on the team. I mean, you know, 56 solo tackles, 4 interceptions, returned 1. I mean, but no one's speaking of his name in fear, or at least has the same reputation necessarily that would get him an all division mention. So, and the fact that Bob Quinn announced that there's a crazy battle going on for safety positions in Detroit right now anyways means that, the conversation definitely doesn't belong in Detroit.
You don't think Glover Quinn even deserves to be in the conversation?
I'm thinking that this past season wasn't his strongest. The way some of the breakdowns later in the season went on, I mean, really he had effect in a few key games, but he kind of disappeared towards the end of the season. Even though the Lions were able to keep winning a bit, it wasn't because of the defense turning it on. It was mostly because the offense finally figured out how to score. So, yeah, a runner-up's nice, and that's probably where the conversation ends for him.
Okay.
Well, it seems like all you guys are going to have to take a back seat to Brian right now because, I'm looking at the safeties in this division, and there isn't much else there, especially on the Bears. I don't know how the Bears are going to stop the pass this year. We're going to get to that in a minute. We are going to start with the Chicago Bears just so we could get to that conversation quicker because I actually really do want to talk about it because I find it very interesting. We're going to go team by team around this division, and we're going to start with the Bears. The Bears are an interesting team in that a lot of people really like what they did on defense, but there are two huge holes on this team, be the offensive line and the secondary, that to me makes it clear that they're not going to be like, because in the NFL, you go into the season and you can make a case for about 20 to 20, 23 of the teams. If everything goes right, then they could be a contender. I can't see it happening in Chicago. Tom, tell me why I'm crazy.
I don't think you're crazy. I'm not crazy about this team. And I don't think they're going to contend for a playoff spot this year, but I think they may be better than you give them credit. The reason why defensive backs, they worry me. I agree with you. I look at their starters right now, and you're looking at Tracy Porter and Kyle Fuller for your cornerbacks. Tracy Porter's okay if he's healthy. You know, he's pretty good. He's probably league average. Kyle Fuller, probably not league average. His primary advantage right now is just youth and the fact that he's learning. At safety, we have Adrian Amos and Harold Jones-Quartey. I would say Jones-Quartey, nobody ever heard of before. He's solid, but not great. And Adrian Amos was okay last year as a rookie, but wasn't around the ball very much, wasn't a playmaker. That's not a great defensive backfield. The strength of the defense is in their front seven. They've improved their defensive line and their linebackers quite a bit. At inside linebacker, they had nobody last year. I mean, it was really bad. And they picked up Jarrell Freeman and Danny Trevathan in free agency. And Trevathan, you know, Super Bowl champion Broncos, is a pretty solid player. Jarrell Freeman, very underrated coming from Indianapolis. He's a very good inside linebacker. Those guys are going to be solid. And if they remain healthy, they'll be fine. Now, there's nobody behind him. There's no depth. But, and you can say that about a lot of positions on the team, which is the primary reason why they probably won't compete. But I think up front, I think their starters are pretty good. At outside linebacker, they're actually pretty deep. Their first-round pick, Leonard Floyd, they have Willie Young, who was hurt for the first recovering from an Achilles tear the first half of the season last year, and that still stilted his production. But he came on late with some reasonable sack production in the last half of the year. The same thing can be said of Lamar Houston on the other side, coming back from a knee injury, wasn't really the same the first half of the year, really came on late. And there's reason to believe that those guys will help Pernell McPhee out. You've got four reasonably good pass rushers there that you might be able to depend upon. The defensive line's been strengthened. They picked up Akeem Hicks in the offseason. He's a very solid defensive end. They drafted Eddie Goldman last year. He had a good solid year at nose tackle. At defensive end on the other side, it's kind of up in the air a little bit, but you could do worse than Mitch Unrain. He's kind of unknown. They drafted Jonathan Bullard in the third round. He's probably the guy they'd like to see take that position. All in all, the front seven, if they excel on defense, that'll be the reason why. They've got reasonably solid personnel and starting in the front seven. And the hope is that they'll generate enough pass pressure to where the pass defense won't be exposed quite so much. At least I'm pretty sure that's what they're hoping. I know you don't like the offensive line that much, but I think I like it better than you do, primarily because I like Leno better than you do. Just watching him play, I thought he was reasonably solid last year. He didn't get a lot of help at left tackle, and I thought he did okay. They drafted Cody Whitehair, and he and Ted Larson and Hieronymus Grasu will compete for two positions at left guard and center. Whitehair can play either one. And I see that if I were to guess right now, I'd say Whitehair will be the center and Larson will be the guard. And assuming Larson's healthy, you could do a lot worse than that. I think they'll be okay. Kyle Long's a Pro Bowler. Bobby Massey is league average at right tackle. So, you know, not a great line, but I don't see it as a major liability for a middle of the road team. What is a major liability is tight end. Zach Miller had a good year last year, but he has a bad habit of not being healthy, and they have nobody behind him. So he better stay healthy. If he does, they'll be okay. If he doesn't, then they're in big trouble because they don't even have a second tight end. And if you ask me, that is the biggest weakness probably in the offense. Jeremy Langford, reasonably good running back. They're looking for him to develop. You have to have some draft picks hit if you're going to excel, and they're hoping that he does. He had a reasonably good year last year. And Jay Cutler is Jay Cutler. You know, you hope with the loss of Adam Gase that he won't fall apart again this year. Nobody would be surprised. But if he doesn't, then maybe he'll be league average again, and, you know, and they'll be okay. We'll wait and see.
Well, there's a lot to unpack there. The answer that I want to know is, which team, whether it be the Bears or the Lions, do you think is going to give the Packers the most trouble this year? I mean, I'd say the Vikings, but for the 50th time, I guess I'm going to go to that joke and say Davey isn't here. But the Lions or the Bears, Brian, which one scares you the most?
That's a tough. Neither of them scare me. I'm sorry, you guys. The Bears, I think I have some of the same questions as you do. I don't like any of the talent on their offense, except for maybe Alshon Jeffrey. Otherwise, you know, Langford, I think, is an average to maybe above average running back. We'll see this year. The Lions, kind of the same story. I think they may have some guys that they can play with on offense. Theo Riddick, I think, is a good little player. And Golden Tate, too, is underrated. But neither of those offenses really scare me. And honestly, neither of the defenses scare me that much anymore either. And maybe that's crazy to say because the Packers stunk on ice on offense last year. But that's just how I see the division.
Well, Will, tell everybody why you think that the Lions actually are the team to look out for in the NFC North, or don't delude yourself and be a rational human being. Pick one.
Jeez.
Well, boy really setting me up there.
Yeah, go super fan.
Now, the Lions are in a position to really break out this season. And the main reason is the guy that they put behind the offense last year in Jim Bob Cooter. Again, he's not settling for just what they did as sort of a band-aid approach last year that got them some success. According to Stafford, he's completely written the book and redone it. So now the offense that they're that you may have seen last year and thought, nah, that's manageable, kept it pretty simple. Well, they're punching it up going into 2016. Now, I'm also aware that last year when we talk about, you know, can Abdullah step up? I mean, the second half of last season, he averaged 4.7 yards per carry, and that, again, was with a simplified playbook. They really put his talents to work. He's got the potential to break out at running back this year, and again, when it comes to all division, maybe be in the talk next season. Wide receivers are a bit of a concern when you're missing possibly the greatest one ever to walk through the NFC North. But at this point, for what Golden Tate can do to get open and also provide some lanes for Marvin Jones, and they still need to figure out a couple of other roles there. Eric Ebron is still developing as a tight end. I know it sounds like we say that every season, but apparently they've got this undrafted free agent, Cole Wick, that's been blowing up in minicamp, and they're figuring out to have a good second alternative there as well that could spread the ball around. Offensive line, we mentioned before. I mean, yeah, the average age is 24. They're doing a little bit of shuffling with Decker going to the left spot and Reif at being the elder guy at age 27, sticking to right tackle. But I think it's part of the Bob Quinn philosophy here that's taken place where they're looking for depth. They went into the draft. They, instead of going with a bunch of high-gloss positions, you know, they brought in linebackers. They brought in safeties, more offensive linemen than usual, just to say we need to build a core here to put in some good competition and really challenge in this division for the long term rather than just trying to find a flash in the pan that might get them a little attention early on and maybe fool us again into thinking we're playoff worthy.
Well, I look at this team, and the thing that really makes me think is what's the timetable on this team? Because you have a coach who was not tied to the GM. The new GM, Bob Quinn, came in from New England. He's the new general manager of the Lions. They don't know if they're going to keep Caldwell. I mean, they said they would keep Caldwell this year, but who knows how tight those guys are. But you look at the roster. Are they going to win this year? Are they supposed to win in a couple years? Like, what has to happen this season for Jim Caldwell to keep his job?
I think they need to show improvement on that 7-9 record from last season. Caldwell is a caretaker for this team. He's not up there as a big presence that's going to knock heads with Bob Quinn. I think the team made it pretty clear that if we're going to bring in Quinn with the Patriots pedigree that he has, those winning ways are what need to just drench the franchise with to make it really clear going forward that we're in it for the long term. That's why the season, to see 1 year of improvement, if Caldwell's not making major issues with the clock or other problems on the offense where it just seems that the coaching questions are coming up every game, he's got a chance to stick around further. And hopefully it's not some situation where Quinn makes some rash decision during the season and it's the same old lines all over again, as we like to say in Detroit. Then knowing that we've got growth that we have to do on defense, on the offensive line, with the young running backs we have and established wide receivers, yeah, it could be a challenge to just tie it, just get to 8-8 and even above that. But I got to figure, as long as Caldwell and Quinn are getting along, and they've got to really figure each other out this season and see if they can remain in lockstep. I'd say it's a good move that we've got stability also with Austin still as a defensive coordinator. That he's got a group that seems to run pretty well. Jim Bob Hooter's making the moves he has to be able to really stamp his offense on the team. So it's a matter of all those pieces really showing that, look, we're a cohesive group, and you can see the same faces going into next year.
I've got a question for Will. You talked a little bit about the running game, the passing game. If you had to choose between those two units, which one do you have more confidence in? And in the ability to kind of win games for you, sustain drives.
Well, let me ask you this. If in the passing game I'm including Theo Riddick and the potential that Abdullah has to break big as well, coming out of the backfield with a drop-off pass or something like a flare, I'll definitely take that passing game. Again, knowing that Golden Tate's good for 90 or so catches easily. In fact, Marvin Jones has been with a decent offense before in Cincinnati. The fact that Ebron is going into what is third season now and wants the ball and is showing some more discipline than he has in the past, I'll definitely take the passing game.
Okay, so again, we're gonna go with the Packers and Vikings together because to me, there's a clear delineation between the top two teams in this division and the bottom two teams. And since Davey isn't here, I think we should just like put that. You know, that's gonna be the title of the podcast. I mean, I don't know if I have the power, but I'm gonna push it to pod. And to be fair, we're also gonna do that we're gonna go back in the archives to every other so-called division preview that we've done and put whichever super fan didn't come for that podcast. I mean, I know there've been a couple divisions where all four were there. We're gonna retroactively change the title to that super fan wasn't here. Shame. If I was using Blog Talk Radio right now, I'd have the shame bell, but for Game of Thrones, but we don't.
I think you should name all of them Davey isn't here, because I don't think he was on any other division podcast either, right? So technically, it's still true.
That is
Davey
true.
Davey drops out.
okay, so Brian, I want you to talk about this so-called rivalry we have going on between the Vikings and Packers. It seems that in this division, every so often, it's the Packers and Bears is the rivalry, whether it be in like the 2010 title game in that era. And then another team steps up, usually the Vikings. The Lions haven't been there in a long time. Sorry, Will. But what has to – if you like make believe there's a giant pie, and what percentage of that pie would you believe – wow, I'm trying to make a metaphor here, but I just can't do it. But basically what I'm trying to ask you is what percentage confidence do you have that the Packers are going to win this division versus the Vikings? Do you think it's like a 50-50 type of thing, or do you think that there's a clear aspect to these two teams, either a unit on one of these two teams that is going to be the downfall of either the Vikings or the Packers?
Well, I definitely think that the Packers offense is better than the Vikings, and I think the Vikings defense is better than the Packers offense. The teams really are good kind of foils for each other, where they just kind of reflect kind of the opposite state for the other team. I get what you're saying. The Vikings are division champs. You're absolutely right. The Packers played like shit during the regular season, and the Vikings took the NFC North. They earned it. Can't take that away from them. But at the same time, who really cares? It doesn't matter what you do in the regular season. What matters is what you do in the postseason. And in the postseason, Minnesota won as many games as the Cleveland Browns did. And I know, they played the Seahawks really tough. Believe me, I actually wanted Minnesota to win that game. But when it came down to crunch time, they straight up ganked a 20-yard field goal, which I'm not sure how you even miss a kick that bad. But that's what they do. Meet the new Vikes, same as the old Vikes. Choke artist extraordinaire. I think anybody who thinks Green Bay isn't still the class of this division severely overestimates Minnesota's ability to win a meaningful game. All that said, I do think it's going to be a tight race. It'll come down to the last couple of weeks because both teams are really good. And when it comes down to those important games, I definitely think the scale tips in the Packers' favor because the Vikings just have a way of letting games slip away.
I think you mentioned the key point when you said win a meaningful game. I was very high on the Vikings last year going in. I was higher than Davey was, what little I talked to him. Even though they won the division, I was mildly disappointed in them because if you go down their 2015 schedule and look at the games they won and lost, they did not have a big win all year. The best team they beat was Green Bay in the last game of the year. Other than that, they struggled to beat a winning team. And I don't think they beat any playoff teams. They really, to their credit, they won the games that they were supposed to win, but they weren't really what you'd call one of the best teams in the league by a long way. And what's really interesting is that may turn out to be the case again this year, but the NFC North in aggregate has the easiest schedule of all the teams in the NFL. And so they may very well make the playoffs again by not beating anybody who's any good, because there are so many teams with poor records, poor 2015 records, that our teams all play. Green Bay, I think, has the easiest schedule in the NFL this year, and that's probably only because they don't have to play Green Bay. The Lions and the Vikings and the Bears are all, you know, right down at the top for easiest schedules in the league as well. So I really, to tell you the truth, you know, as somebody who really went into last year really high on the Vikings, I'm not nearly as high on them now as I was. And I think they're getting by as a slightly better than mediocre team that's simply winning the games that they're supposed to win. And I don't think, you know, I don't see them beating the Arizona Cardinals of the world. They're not going to beat, you know, New England or any of the elite teams. They're not going to beat Pittsburgh. You know, when you think of, you know, all the really good teams around the NFL, they're not the kind of team that's going to win those games. They're going to lose to the Seattles in the world. That playoff game, they were lucky it was that close, really. They played Seattle earlier in the year and got crushed. So I got to tell you, you know, they've yet to impress me. And if they want to do that, they're going to have to take a fairly big step up. I'm assuming Green Bay is going to be healthier this year, and I'm assuming that they're going to take the division.
Well, in looking at the Vikings' schedule, I mean, they do have, towards the end of the season, they finish off against the Bears. Before that, you know, Green Bay, but they still get Jacksonville. They, of course, got the Lions twice, as we mentioned. They've got, you know, an improved Redskins team. I mean, it's the season to play the East, right? So
right.
Carolina's in there. I mean, it's really a question of how much more does Adrian Peterson have now that he's back and he played a full season last year? Is he going to be the same constant on the offense? And again, does Bridgewater continue to develop? And are the weapons he has on the outside that he's tossing to going to be enough? I mean, you can't just dump off to Kyle Rudolph for a 10-yard touchdown every time. You've got to actually get into the red zone to be able to use him most effectively.
The bottom line in this division is if Jordy Nelson and the rest of Aaron Rodgers' weapons are healthy, I don't see anyone stopping them. This is one of the greatest offenses in NFL history. And no matter how good the Vikings defense is, or no matter what blood magic the Lions or the Bears are going to try to pull, I just don't think anyone else is going to win this division besides the Packers. And I was hoping that maybe one of you guys would disagree with me, but the one guy who was most likely going to disagree with me didn't show up today, guys. I don't know if you heard.
I will say this, Andrew. I watch a lot of Packer games. I mean, that's fairly obvious. I think we all do. And I think Brian would agree with this. You know, they lost Jordy Nelson. It was a big loss, but those guys were not on the same page last year. I mean, there was more to it than that. They had, you know, to my eye, they had receivers running wrong routes. They were not on the same page as Aaron Rodgers. The offense didn't look as crisp. And I don't think it was just the loss of Jordy Nelson. And Brian, you know, I don't know if you agree with me or not, but they have some work to do. And I know Mike McCarthy took over the offense again this year. And maybe they'll get some of that crispness back in the offense and they'll execute a little better. But if they don't, then there's going to be a problem because they're not going to be one of the greatest offenses in the NFL unless they do better this year.
Yeah, I was really surprised to hear you say that you, Andrew, think that we could be a historically great offense. And not because I disagree. I think we have that potential, but just because of how bad we looked last year, I thought the narrative would be different. I easily see us as a top 10 offense. The return of Jordy Nelson cannot be understated. He's coming back from an ACL, so we'll see how that goes. But there were reports even at the end of last year that he could have played in the Super Bowl if he wasn't placed on IR. I think a trickle-down effect that it should have on the rest of the receiving corps should allow for better matchups across the board. A really interesting battle to watch is the number three wide receiver spot. we saw Davante Adams really struggle last season. He's one of the people who we couldn't get open, who was running wrong routes, who was dropping passes. He was a second-round pick, so maybe he gets the benefit of the doubt. But the people's champ, the great white hype, Jeff Janis, has flashed. Every time he's been given an opportunity, he flashed again in the playoffs last year when he had a chance. So I think we could really see him give Davante Adams a run for his money at that outside wide receiver spot. We also added an athletic tight end in Jared Cook this offseason. That was probably our weakest position on offense. He's on the sidelines now following a cleanup procedure in his knee, but should be back in time for training camp. And I the thing I'm most looking forward to with him is we should be able to threaten the deep coverage up the seam again. We've really lacked that since JerMichael Finley had that career-ending injury. And also, I think that just having Jared Cook will help Richard Rodgers a little bit too. He's been an adequate tight end for us for the past few years, but really isn't a dynamic player. And I think he played way too many snaps now last season. He was really the only guy we had at tight end for most of the year. I think just being able to rotate him and keep him fresh will make him look a little bit better than he did last year, even on fewer snaps. The offensive line continues to be underrated. We talked about that already. We have the same five starters for the third straight year. I put a lot of value and continuity on that. I doubt they make it to a fourth year since three of them are in contract years, but for this year anyway, all signs point to continued success. Eddie Lacy, he was out of shape last year. That 60-yard run against the Cardinals looked like it took about 45 minutes. But with the help of P90X and his own contract that's coming up after this year, you'd expect that he would have every reason to be supremely motivated too. And all of that is to say nothing about the fact that we have Aaron Rodgers at quarterback. So I think I tend to agree with you, Andrew, that we have a great shot to be a great offense this offseason. I think I just didn't expect to hear that out of you. So kudos, you're in the know.
Well, I just think I'm watching the NBA draft as we talk right now. And the reason why the draft is so important is because in basketball, one player can make such a difference. And the beautiful thing about football is that it's the teams from year to year. There's so much parity that good teams are going to could be bad and bad teams could be good. But Rodgers is just so great. And watching him do what he did last year, I mean, the numbers don't show it, but he put the balls that he had James Jones running routes for him, getting an inch of separation off every player, like not even an inch. And he was just putting it on the back shoulder every time. And I think he's going to come out pissed off. But he's also going to be looking down the line. He's going to see Jordy Nelson running routes. And that to me is going to make a big difference. And to most people with a brain, because just why is Jordy Nelson playing football? In football, if you have a great quarterback, I mean, get ready, guys. I mean, I'm going to say something that you've never heard before, but quarterback's the most important position in the NFL. It's why we spend so much time talking about it, why ESPN spends time arguing nonsense about is Joe Flacco an elite quarterback, like that type of stuff. And Rodgers is one of those guys that's that good, who is going to carry his team no matter the holes on defense or the receivers he has running routes for him. And I just think he's going to come out playing at his peak at top level Aaron Rodgers. And it's going to be weird to me, at least, if people are shocked by that.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think you hit the nail on the head with that. I totally expect all the same things. But to Tom's point earlier, he looked off at times last year too. He seemed to be throwing off his back foot an awful lot. So there were some theories that he may have injured the front one. He seemed to have one or two passes a game that kind of made you raise your eyebrow and wonder who was really wearing that number 12 jersey, because it just didn't look like him, just kind of missing open receivers or overthrowing them. So I do think that there's going to have to be room for improvement if we are going to be a great offense this year on offense, but I totally buy into that being the case in about a year or when we get to the end of the season.
I think the one question we all need answered, and this is going to be the final question of the podcast, who's going to come in third, Will and Tom? Fight it out. Who's coming in third place? Or do you think that I'm overlooking you guys too much? But we'll start with Will, because they came, wait, I don't even know who came in third, so why are we even asking this question? I was going to say who came in third last year is going to get the first chance to answer, but I don't even know.
It was the Lions that came in third last year, and I think we're overestimating the Vikings again. They're a team that's also in development. I argue that the Lions' defense is better than what the Vikings put out there every week. And at this point, yes, the Lions' offense has to come together, but that could be the difference between, again, 7-9 repeating or moving up to 9-7.
So is that, do you think the Lions are closer to the Vikings or they're closer to the Bears? Or do you think that they're all in the same area?
I'd hate to say that the Bears are in such disarray trying to establish exactly what they're trying to build. I mean, John Fox has worked wonders before, but not when they're still trying to establish some real basic roles on their team. The Lions are in a position to be able to step up with the leadership that they have. And it's just a matter of putting it out on the field and being consistent. So, yes, I think they're closer to second place with the Vikings than fourth place down in Chicago.
I do not say this very often about the Bears because I consider myself to be a fairly level-headed fan. At least I try to be. I think I like this team better than all you guys do. And that does not happen very often. I think you might be underestimating them a little bit. I like what they've got at wide receiver. I know Brian said he didn't like their wide receivers. I like Alshon Jeffery, Kevin White, and Eddie Royal in the slot. I think Eddie Royal is underrated in the slot. I wouldn't put him anywhere else. I think that there is enough of a threat there, and I think they're solid enough on the offensive line to be okay. And, you know, I watch Jeremy Langford, and I'm not telling you that he's Adrian Peterson, but he can do everything, and he can do a reasonable job at all of it. He can catch, he can block, he can run. I think I like this team better than you do. I like their front seven. I like what they've got at outside linebacker. I think Lamar Houston was considered to be a great pickup a few years ago from the Bears, and I think he's got the chops to be a pretty good pass rusher. I think Willie Young has shown that he can be a good pass rusher. Pernell McPhee, I like these guys at what I consider to be the most important positions on the offense and the defense. I'm going to make my case. I think they're the third place team. And I think there's potential for the Lions. I like what Jim Bob Cooter did last year. I like what I saw, but they're going to have to continue that. And I'm not sure they're going to. And I don't trust Matthew Stafford any more than anybody else does. So I am actually going to be, I guess, as it turns out, optimistic. And I'm going to say that the Bears improve. Maybe they get to 7 wins. That's the over-under for them in Vegas. And that might be good enough to get them third place in the division.
It sounds like I'm coming off as a Bears hater, but I actually think they're the third best team in this division also. And the reason I say that is because to me, the Bears and the Lions are going in opposite directions organizationally. I don't trust what's going on behind the scenes in Detroit. I don't like Jim Caldwell as a coach. And I like what Chicago did in free agency, especially with the two inside linebackers that they got. But you mentioned that you like Tom mentioned that he likes where the Bears are at the important positions. To me, the offensive line and the secondary, two of the worst units in football. And that's just my opinion. You like, again, we're going in circles here. You like Leno more than I do. But I think you look at that secondary. I don't think you could argue that it's definitely a problem. And The offensive line is going to give Jay Cutler issues, and with the new coaching staff, I believe you guys did promote Dowell Loggins to the offensive coordinator. Has some continuity there, but we'll see what Adam Gase does in Miami with Tannehill, how big a factor he was in Jay Cutler's 2015 season. But that's about all the time we have, and I'd like to thank Brian, Will, and Tom for joining me to talk about the NFC North, and for James to talk Game of Thrones. But it's everybody showed up today and had a good game, and I'm thankful for all of you. Thanks, guys.
Everyone showed up, that is, except for Davey. Oh, Davey. Listen, it's tough getting all four super fans to schedule at the same time. I think the reason why we're giving Davey such a hard time about this one is because the NFC North, not only was it the last division that we previewed, they also rescheduled their recording at least 3 or 4 different times to make it so that all four of them could be on the show. And the fact that Davey missed it, well, I don't know. Shame. For shame. I agree, Andrew. For shame to Davey. All right, the NFC North. I do disagree quite a bit with what these guys had to say about their division, because like other divisions, I believe there is one team on the top, and then you've got the other three teams. And even amongst those other three teams, I think one of the teams doesn't necessarily belong. And so we'll start with that team. I've got the Lions at 4-12. I'm not a believer in Jim Caldwell as a head coach. I wasn't a believer in him last year. I'm certainly not a believer in him this year. Without Calvin Johnson, that offense takes a major hit. And all the other reasons that were described to you by the superfans earlier, I see the Lions taking a major step backwards, going 4-12, saying sayonara to Jim Caldwell, and letting that new Patriot GM do what the Patriots do best, improve teams. Next up, we have the... where do I want to go next? Well, I'll go with the team that I think will finish in third. That's the Minnesota Vikings. Yeah, that's right. I have the Bears finishing better than the Vikings. Because honestly, I think the Bears are closer to the Vikings than they are to the Packers, which seemed to be the comparison Andrew kept wanting to make, trying to compare everyone to the Packers. I think the or maybe a better way to put it, I think the Vikings are closer to the Bears than they are to the Packers. I know... I hated the Vikings last year, and I know I continue to bring that hate with me this year, but there's just something about the Vikings that doesn't sit right with me. I don't believe they're an 11-5 team. I really don't. Maybe they'll go out and prove me wrong again. Great. Please do. I love to be proven wrong. It's one of my favorite things. But I don't believe in the Vikings this year. I do believe a little bit more in the Bears, and maybe that's a fault of my own. Much like Alex Smith in the AFC West, I'm a bigger believer in Jay Cutler than other people are. And I know he's kind of a blockhead, and I know he'll throw that really bad throw. But man, he throws really good ones too sometimes. And I like to compare my own 12-year-old son to Jay Cutler, the way he plays, because there are times when he just throws the most beautiful ball, and then there's other times when he throws into triple coverage, and I'll be like, what are you thinking? And then my son will say, well, the receiver caught it the last time I threw it to him. I think that's a little bit of what Jay Cutler has. The difference is, my son's 12 years old. Jay Cutler, I don't think you've got much more room to improve. That said, I've got the Bears at 9-7, the Vikings at 7-9. I think those two teams are pretty equal when you compare the two teams. And plus or minus two games, they could easily flip-flop. The Packers. I think the Packers are the class of this division. They've been the class of this division. Andrew mentioned historical offense. I don't know if I can go that far, but it is super strong, and it's all based on the quarterback, Aaron Rodgers. I see this team going 14-2 this year. And as was mentioned earlier, the NFC North does have the easiest schedule, and the Packers have the easiest schedule of any team in the NFL this year. 14-2 for the Packers is going to do them wonders, but will it be enough when they make it to the playoffs? And by the way, the Bears at 9-7, I've got quite a few teams at 9-7 this year in the NFC. Are the Bears playoff bound? Well, I'm glad you asked that question, because we will answer it on the next Fan Up podcast. We're going to take this coming Thursday off, but next Sunday, you'll be able to hear our preseason, postseason predictions. That's right. I'm going to recap all of my predictions, all of my division preview predictions, and talk about my postseason predictions. And so you'll want to find out, where do I have the Packers? How far are the Packers going in the playoffs? Will the Bears make the playoffs? I think that's an interesting story to watch. And of course, many, many other interesting results that came out of my picking a winner for every single game in the upcoming NFL season. A foolhardy practice, I know, but I'm going to do it again before the season begins, after the preseason is over, because we know there's going to be changes. Someone's getting hurt, and it's going to be somebody with a big name, and it'll have a huge impact on that team. We want to hear from you. All the division previews are done. What do you agree with? What do you disagree with? What do you really disagree with? Send us those emails, nextfanup@gmail.com. You can tweet us at NFU Podcast. And of course, our Facebook page, facebook.com/NFU podcast. You can always just search Next Fan Up on Facebook. Page will come right up. Download our podcast on iTunes or anywhere great podcasts are heard. When you do that, leave us a review on iTunes. We love reviews. That's another way you can reach us, leaving us a review on iTunes. And please share the podcast with your friends. This isn't like extra secret fantasy information here. We're just sharing our thoughts as fans because we know the people that know their teams best are the fans. We are by the fan, for the fan. Next Fan Up. Tune in next week as we bring you our preseason, postseason predictions, and I will leave you with the immortal words of Jeff Fisher. There you have it.
Well, I think we learned today that, this game is four quarters long.